having held these babies and seen what abortion is, I can truly tell you that abortion is the most vile and demonic and despicably wicked thing that anybody could ever do to a child. And it has to stop.
Hi, I'm Evelyn Ray. Welcome to the Cauldron Pool Show. Tonight we have a very special episode on the show. It's one with a heavy heart. It's one with a large burden on our backs, but it is one that is incredibly necessary for us to listen, for us to watch, for us to converse about, and most importantly, to raise awareness for. And before we get fully in the deep of this, I do want to just put a warning up for viewers to view this with caution. As a Christian, I strongly recommend that we do persist with this episode, that we do watch the things that are going to be coming out of here, and that we do listen, because it is a topic and it is an issue that should be at the forefront of our minds, should be in the center of our hearts, and should certainly be one of the biggest things we are praying ends across the world. But I would also like to strongly suggest that if you have any children nearby, that you choose where you listen to this. It is probably not wise for them to hear or see anything that's probably going to be said here today. But with that in mind, my hope and my prayer is that by doing this interview today, we can bring glory to God through all of this, and that we can ultimately end one of the most depraved industries, most degenerate, rotten industries that the world has seen. And again, with all of that in mind, I would like to welcome AJ Hurley onto the show tonight. Thank you so much for joining me, AJ.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Evelyn. I appreciate it. And it's not on the best of circumstances that we do this, but at the same time, it's a pleasure to meet you. And thanks for having me on.
Now, you reached out to me a little while ago saying that you'd love to have the opportunity to sort of speak about something that has happened recently in America. Mm-hmm. I've been tweeting about this. I've been trying to raise awareness, but many people in Australia were confused and had absolutely no idea about what I was tweeting about. We saw recently in Shanghai and in China all of these videos of dogs and cats being dragged out onto the street and being killed in the name of COVID. And it correlated and it coincided at the same time that an absolutely abhorrent and degenerate evil crime happened in America. And I tried to raise awareness that unfortunately the world seemed more outraged at dogs and cats who were dying instead of 115 babies that were found in a box on the street in America. Now, I do want to sort of get into the context of that for people who might not be aware of what actually happened or have any clue of anything. I'd love for you were sort of there to sort of give just a brief sort of concise summary of what happened, and then we'll sort of get into your involvement with that a bit later.
Yeah, so I have a few friends who are involved in the pro-life movement, kind of anti-abortion movement. And what we have done, what we typically do over here is we go out to the abortion clinic in the morning as believers, as Christians, just even actually some of the people that go, one of the pro-life movements associated with this story isn't even a Christian. She's actually an atheist. And they go down and basically just try to speak to mothers and provide resources, kind of holistic care to mothers, and curtail the certain issues that bring them there to try to save children and restore families. And so my wife and I have done sidewalk counseling in that regard, and have helped bring a lot of women resources in order to not basically just murder their children. And so a few of my friends were in Washington, D.C., and my friend Lauren and my friend Teresa were down there just doing sidewalk counseling. And this truck from a company called Curtis Bay Energy pulled up. And when you do this work often enough, you know that mothers come in and then babies eventually go out to have their remains handled with. And so this company, Curtis Bay, is an energy waste company that's literally just taking babies from the abortion clinics, and they're incinerating them. And from their energy, they basically, from their remains, are creating energy and electricity for the DC and Baltimore area, believe it or not. But so this company, this truck pulls up and takes boxes from this abortion clinic out, and this starts to load them on the truck. And my friends say to this driver, "Hey, do you know what's inside those boxes?" And this driver had absolutely zero clue. And they said, "Well, those are aborted babies." And he was just totally shocked and visibly disturbed. You could tell that he was potentially doing this for years and never even knew what was inside those boxes. And he's frantically looking through his paperwork, trying to determine, like, man, if is this true? Looks and sees the box. Washington Surge Center checks his paperwork, and it just like dawns on him. And they use this opportunity to say, "Hey, you know, can we take a box?" And he's like, "What? Like, what? Why in the world would you do that?" And they're like, basically, "We want to give these babies a dignified burial and a funeral service for." And so he basically says, "Well, I've scanned these boxes in. I'm not looking." So my friend Lauren takes a box, and they go back to, you know, a place of safety and open it up, and there's over 115 you know, aborted image bearers of God inside at different gestational ages. But five of those babies were almost full term babies, Evelyn, and brutally dismembered, some of them, and some of them had evidence of infanticide and partial birth abortion, which over here in America is totally against the law. But unfortunately, big abortion and the whole industry is very much politically a charged issue. And so abortion is highly unregulated over here. And now we're learning that even when you catch abortionists red-handed in partial birth abortion and infanticide, politicians are basically just covering for big abortion and pain capable, fully viable. My background's as a respiratory therapist, so I put little babies on ventilators. It's kind of what got me into this whole pro-life movement. But yeah, pain capable, fully viable. Every single one of those babies would have survived outside of the womb. And here these babies were found, and nothing is being done. The DC PD and DC mayor has totally said, "We're not going to do an autopsy on these babies, and no crimes have been committed." So it's a pretty big story over here. It's surprising, but not surprising that you haven't heard of it, because, you know, it is abortion, and, you know, the censorship is pretty heavy. But it's been a huge thing, because I mean, nothing like this has happened in 15 or 20 years, especially these late gestational ages of these babies. It's been pretty shocking. So yeah
we recently over here in Australia, and by recently I mean in the last sort of few years, we had legislation passed to allow for late term abortions all the way up to 9 months, and we also had legislation passed which about intervention if a botched abortion takes place and the baby's born alive. Mm. And it's truly abhorrent. It's truly evil that humanity, lack of humanity, but that human beings could do this, as you said, to image bearers of God. We were made in his likeness, and it's it's really heartbreaking. But I wanted to sort of get a little bit more of your background, because I do think it's important for context, because as you mentioned, you've dealt with babies before. You have obviously assisted babies, whether it be premature babies, all various reasons why they might need respiratory sort of professional care. So if you don't mind going into a little bit of your background with medicine and things like that, I'd really appreciate it.
Yeah. So right out of high school, I became an EMT, went to school, became an EMT, and started working on an ambulance over here. So I've been in the medical field for about 20 years. So it's, I'm no surprise. It's no, you know, it's not a surprise to me to handle things like this. And I have plenty of experience showing up on scene and seeing dead children, seeing children who've even been brutally dismembered, or that's definitely within the purview of my experience, unfortunately. So I went back to school, got a college degree, and then became what's called a respiratory care practitioner, or they call them RTs over here. And it's like a specialized nurse, if you will. Like, we put little babies. Well, this is even more of a debate. Respiratory therapist, our bread and butter is the ventilator and managing the life support breathing machine. So when you can't breathe on your own, or you know, if your lungs are sick, you get put on this ventilator. And so then you have to be specialized in training with little babies, because premature children have something missing in their lungs called surfactant. And that basically makes their lungs really, really hard to breathe on their own. And so you have to put these babies on a ventilator until they're grown enough to where their lungs become more developed. So that's kind of my background. I worked for 7 years as a respiratory therapist at UCLA Medical Center, and provided medical care there to the community. And unfortunately, during COVID and everything, I didn't want to give them the vaccine paperwork. And so I kind of got fired from my job from that. And so ever since then, I've been involved in the pro-life industry, pro-life movement. So what's kind of catapulted me into the pro-life movement is seeing the discrepancy between these babies that we're saving at 21, 22, 23 weeks, and the ones that we can abort, and really no difference in their ontological value other than just a mere fiat decision of the mother as to whether they're worthy of life or not. And so it's a huge hypocrisy, seeing these babies and then other ones that are literally torn apart limb from limb and dismembered in the most grotesque ways. And really no difference between the two, except for what another person views as to what the value of a human is. So that's a little bit of my background that's brought me into the pro-life kind of anti-abortion movement over here. And it's been a whirlwind, man.
I can't imagine. Like, I served for 12 years, you know, and I worked in child abuse and sex crimes. I've seen a lot of dead children as well, and seen some pretty horrible things. But the footage that I saw coming out from, you know, what you experienced recently with these 115 babies was probably up there for one of the worst things I've personally seen in my life. And like you, that's coming up against a lot of other bad things we've probably experienced. So that's saying a lot. But I've always found it incredibly interesting how people can justify when a life begins. As you mentioned, mothers who have premature babies at 21 weeks are dying for their children so that they could live. You know, they would do anything. And then you have women at 9 months in some cases who decide, you know, 39 weeks up to 40 weeks, they decide that they don't want the child. And yet that is not a life. And it's interesting, Christianity aside, if you speak to any embryologist around the world, every single embryologist always agrees that life begins at conception. It's an undeniable scientific objective fact, yet it's just disregarded when it comes to abortion. It just sort of shows the lengths and the depths of the depravity of man right now.
Absolutely.
But, you know, you obviously have been drawn into this sort of pro-life sort of movement. Obviously, I fully believe in the sovereignty of God, and he's obviously got a plan for you, and you've obviously got the background that you have and the experience you've had, and I think it will serve God well and yourself well going into here. But I think what a lot of people are probably wanting to know is how you got specifically involved with this particular case, because you mentioned a couple of friends who saw the truck driver, who saw the box and who were able to take that. But at what point in time did you get involved, and can you kind of explain what led to that and how you got in?
Yeah, I was gonna go there. So I'm glad you asked that, because that is the next point that people are wondering. So I happen to be on the East Coast. So for those who don't know, DC is on the eastern side of the U.S. And I was in just a couple states away. My wife and I were in New York at the time, and at the Margaret Sanger Planned Parenthood over there, just doing ministry and trying to help women. And so we get this phone call from my friend Teresa, just frantic. I've never heard her speak like this ever, and just terrified, and saying, AJ, I need you here right now. So my wife and I jumped on a train, and we were there day one that they picked up these babies, and about 4.5 hours later. And I mean, I've said this before, but nothing would be able to really prepare us for what we were going to see. These just children brutally dismembered and brutally murdered. Their images and faces I will never, ever forget. But they basically just brought us along to help with this thing. And so we had a kind of a monumental task before us. It's like navigating the legality of all this, obviously, and then trying to get justice for these babies, because over here, you know, this isn't really legal what they're doing, especially with the evidence of partial birth abortion and infanticide in some of these children. So we had to, first of all, just videograph all these babies, and God in his sovereignty just allowed that to happen, even though it was just, the events were so gruesome. But this is really awakening a lot of people to the horror of abortion, because it's never really been seen to this degree. I feel like it's, God has allowed us before I think judgment to a last kind of chance to turn away, if you will. But he's really just kind of peeled back the curtain into what's happening every single day in this country, and allowed us to see the images and the victims and the videos of these babies and the gruesome aspect of abortion and depravity that's associated with it. And so, we were there just to kind of help strategize, think of how we're going to publicize and make this available to the public, and when we were going to deliver these babies over to the police. So
Now, you sort of mentioned late-term abortion and infanticide, and it's interesting over here in Australia, I would say that we're pretty naive when it comes to methods and methodologies used for abortion. I was recently on a podcast where I spoke about the methods of late-term abortion, to which people just could not believe it over here. It was like outside of their grasp. They could not fathom that this is real. And I sort of explained to them how at 9 months old, they can induce labor. They can birth the baby feet first, which is the unnatural way to do it. And then they can snip the spinal cord whilst the head is still inside the cervix of the mother, because that is, once it's taken its breath, it's technically unlawful, although I don't doubt that this happens all the time. But that's another issue with late-term abortion. But people over here in Australia just couldn't believe that that's actually something that happens. And I spoke to Laura Klassen, who's an anti-abortion activist, lovely woman who's very much in the deep of this particular subject. And she said that that's been outlawed in America, that that's a technique that they're not really allowed to use anymore. When you sort of mention before about these late-term abortions, partial abortions, and also infanticide, is that sort of what you're referring to? Like the methodologies that were used to abort the babies would have been something similar to that?
Yeah, exactly. And thanks for clarifying that, because partial birth abortion is kind of a definition that most people know over here in the US. But that's exactly what it is. You don't always have to flip the baby and turn and breech for it with its feet first. Out here, partial birth abortion, they even deliver the baby head first up to its shoulders and then snip the back of the baby's skull, and then they just suction the child's brains out and kill it that way. And so then they deliver the rest of the body, and it's like, oh, well, it's still in the womb technically, but it's just another different way of performing infanticide and live birth abortion without under the auspices or covers of, you know, being in that magical birth canal that somehow confers personhood. So that's described in detail into federal law here, and it is totally against the law to perform that type of a procedure. And then also there's something called the Born Alive Infant Protection Act that comes into play in federal law too, that protects babies born alive. And we're supposed to provide medical care for babies that are born alive. And so it's unlike over here, it's very much illegal. But what we're seeing is just DC mayor totally covering for big abortion. And refusing to even perform an autopsy, which would be so vital for determining how these babies died, because all you have to do is check for air in the lungs, right? So if like these babies had taken their first breath, well, there would still be evidence of oxygen in their lungs. And so they can test if this baby had come out and was born alive or not. And it's crazy. So there's five babies, and I can get into this a little bit too, but one of the children was still in the amniotic sac. It's a very rare birth, and in this case, abortion, where it's called an in-call pregnancy, where the child is born and still intact in the fully intact in the amniotic sac. But what that means is basically that this child, because normally what they can do is you know, clamp the umbilical cord somehow, but it's impossible to clamp the umbilical cord, kill the baby, and then deliver it without perforating the amniotic sac, because you got to get around the child in order to clamp cut the umbilical cord. So in this case, the question, really, the evidence points that this baby was delivered out, the umbilical cord cut or clamped, and then this child just left on a table to suffocate in its own amniotic fluid. And when we looked at the child, unlike the other ones, it was just completely purple, completely blue, as if it just sat there and suffocated. So horribly unspeakable depravity, you know. And I'll probably get into that. It's against federal law here, but doesn't seem to be regulated at all by the government. So
there's certainly there are some things that the government really want to get involved with, and almost too much, like the overreach and the big government. And there are some things that the government you could actually desperately use and do for good, and they just don't want a bar of it. And unfortunately, abortion and I guess the regulation of the practices of abortion are probably one of those things that they're not involved in, and they would rather sweep under the rug. I think it comes from a culture of protecting the mothers and a fear of almost accusing the mothers of crime. It's something that they don't really want to sort of get involved in, and it comes at the cost, I guess, of things like this happening and nothing being done about it. But I saw the footage of these five babies that looked fully developed. I mean, you are a medical sort of expert in some way. You have experience in the field, and I heard you mention that these babies, you could pretty much hazard a guess that they would have survived outside of the womb if they were born without medical intervention, because they were so far along in their gestational development. But if you're comfortable with it, I don't want to, but I think we have to kind of, you know, put the spotlight on what actually happens to these babies. And, you know, you mentioned that you got the phone call from your friends. You were a train ride away. Your wife and yourself went and you helped photograph the babies. And again, if you're comfortable, I'd sure appreciate you sort of going through the things that you saw. And I will play these videos later for the people watching at home.
Sure. Yeah, so there were five babies. All of them were late term. I know for a fact every one of them most likely would have survived outside of the womb, some of which with very little, one of which probably no medical help, one or two of which probably no medical help at all. One of these children, we named all five: Christopher X, Holly, Phoenix, Angel, and what was the other one? Christopher X, Holly, Phoenix, Angel, and geez Louise. Can't remember the other one offhand. But so we named every single one of them just to kind of dignify them. But Christopher X was the largest of the five, and was almost full term. I had a friend of mine date him around 34, 35 weeks gestational age. And he, three of them were totally intact. And two of them were just gruesomely dismembered. So Christopher X was huge. I mean, I've just so surprised, because one of our friends, we came back to another state and saw their newborn baby, and he was so much smaller than Christopher. And I had to leave the room because I was just so overwhelmed with sadness. He was just huge, totally intact. And then just, I don't know, probably a victim of just infanticide, because he was still pink. And then there was Angel, which was another baby that was just totally dismembered. And then Holly was dismembered also. Phoenix was still, like I explained, in the amniotic sac. And then the last child, oh, Harriet, I'm sorry. Harriet was the other one. So Harriet, it was the only one of the five that was the overwhelming evidence of partial birth abortion. So there's a lot of memes of her, like a beautiful artistic drawings, renderings of her. But she had her one eye blown open and the back of her skull snipped. Her brains were suctioned out, but her eye was blown open because with the trauma of the suction device, it will cause one of the eyes or both of the eyes to totally get blown out. But huge, very evident prima facie evidence of partial birth abortion with Harriet. And you know, the first thing when I held these babies was just an overwhelming sense of anger, Evelyn. It was, people asked me what was like, and I can only say it was weird. It was as if my brain couldn't separate what was the depravity and what was done, the evil that was done to these children, from the children themselves. It was like I looked at this beautiful image of God, but it was just like it felt evil. And so that was the strange thing about it, is just felt so profoundly demonic and evil. But you're holding an image bearer, a perfect, beautiful, innocent image bearer of God. And so that, the discrepancy there was just unlike anything I've ever experienced. I never will, I don't think. And I just, the first thing I thought was, I will never, ever, ever be the same. Having held these babies and seen what abortion is, I can truly tell you that abortion is the most vile and demonic and despicably wicked thing that anybody could ever do to a child. And it has to stop. There are a lot of issues at play of injustice and issues that we need to solve in society, but this one has got to take the cake.
It's like I sort of mentioned before, like, you know, both you and I, prior to really understanding abortion, have probably seen some pretty bad things, but there, I understand what you mean about the discrepancy with emotions and feelings. I've experienced it myself with some of the evil things. And I honestly don't think that we were created to really handle these things. I think these things are a result of the fall, of the curse, of sin. And it is certainly not, you know, I think that's part of why death is so hard for us as human beings to comprehend. And we can't comprehend it because we weren't created to die. That's the thing. We were created to live forever. That's how we were created in the Garden of Eden. We were supposed to walk with God on this earth as perfect beings. And so when sin came and when the curse fell upon man and mankind and the earth, these things are very hard for us to understand. It's not in our inherited nature to really understand these things. I don't really know how else to articulate it other than I feel I can understand the position you're in because of some of the things that I've seen, but hearing what you've had to witness and your wife and your friends, like I'm going to continue to pray for you guys because this is something that you probably will carry for the remainder of your days. My prayer is that it can be used for the glory of God and for his kingdom, and that, you know, good can come from these experiences. Even if we save one beautiful baby, like that's something, you know. But we sort of also mentioned before, you and I, before we pressed record, that if everybody actually just understood abortion, and if everybody just even just watched an abortion, the abortion industry would probably be over. But people don't really want to see what it is. People want to brush it under the rug. People, you know, think you can just take a tablet and you'll just get a period and it will abort your baby. And that's kind of the end of it. No big deal, et cetera. And I sort of wanted to use that as a segue into the other 100 and something babies that were also found in the box with the five sort of late term ones. If you can kind of explain that situation with the other babies that were in there, their sort of gestational period, and maybe some methods that were possibly used to abort those particular human beings.
Yeah. And, you know, there's this huge buzz about these five babies because I think we can relate to them better because we see and hold babies that big all the time. We have such an understanding of the innocence of those children that we hold, but we never really have any experience with these other babies. I held tiny babies in my hand that had fully developed fingers and toes. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize that by the time a woman has missed her first period, her baby's heart and finds out she's pregnant, her baby's heart is already beating. And wholly distinct human from conception. So when we talk about these babies who are these five, you know, and the hashtag is being used in America, justice for the five, but it's important that we say we're not making a kind of qualitative or ontological distinction between the value of these late term, more developed babies and the first trimester babies as if one was more valuable than the other. And it's every single human from conception to natural death is just as valuable. And so when I have a 6 week old little baby that I hold that his arms are just budding, it's not like from conception on, you know, if it's 5 weeks, a little bit more, we sprinkle a little bit more fairy dust of personhood. And then when it's 11 or 12 weeks, a little bit more fairy dust of personhood. No, science of embryology, like you had said, is so unbelievably clear. In fact, even now, 98% of a biologist over here, they recently polled, agree that life begins at conception. So it's basic biology that from the moment of conception, a unique child with its own distinct DNA is emerges. And so that's the beauty of creation, of a new life. And so for some reason, we have created arbitrary categories of distinction of persons and beings. Whereas it's much like we did with slavery, right? So we took a certain class of human based on some arbitrary accidental property, whether it be the color of their skin, or, you know, whether type of race they are, that determined their value, personhood and human rights. And 150 years ago in America, but today it's no different. We've just chosen another arbitrary class of incidental or accidental properties to ground value and dignity. And a whole class of humans based on their size or their location or their level of development or their environment, we've just deemed them unworthy of any protection of life or dignity. And so it's hugely hypocrisy, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take, having seen these and just seeing America, and I mean America and California now, we're introducing whole bills of infanticide in Maryland and in Colorado. We're seeing the real evidence, I think, of what abortion is. It's not a lack of knowledge. It's not a lack of science. And the party of science over here is the one that is heralding these abortion extreme political measures. And so the real issue is not a lack of knowledge. It's not a lack of understanding or biology or anything like that. It's an issue of sin and depravity, an issue of evil in society. And it's just going to take a spiritual awakening for people to stop hardening their hearts, to be awakened to the horrors of what abortion really is.
Mm. Yeah, I think, you know, everybody always says, trust the science, unless the science goes against their narrative. And that's exactly what we're sort of seeing now. Now, I wanted to sort of ask you what happened after you took the videos, after you took the photos, and after you kind of figured out, like, obviously you got a call from your friend, you dove straight in. That would be, you probably have a lot of adrenaline going on, a lot of emotion, but what was sort of happening with the legality side of it, and what sort of happened after the photographs and everything were taken of all of those babies?
I'm glad you asked that, because there's a ton of media misinformation and media slander that's happened over this whole case. It took a little while to deliver these babies over to DCPD for a number of reasons. Like, we were trying to get an independent pathologist that could look at the babies and give an opinion on the children before we turned them in, because we knew that this might happen, probably would happen, especially a very liberal place of America and DC. DC is often termed, instead of the District of Columbia, the District of Corruption. And so we knew something probably like this would happen. So we wanted to get an independent pathologist. It was just very, very incredibly hard to find one, especially one that would kind of risk the legalities surrounding this, which is kind of weird on one side, because on one side, they want to pretend like these aren't babies. These aren't real humans. These are just garbage, right? This is just medical waste going off to an incinerator. So, you know, on one hand, it's like, well, what are they going to charge us with? Just stealing trash? But on the other hand, when it's convenient for that side, right, then it suddenly becomes a baby. And now they're going to charge us with handling corpses. So that's, it's like, oh, point. Wow. Mm. You know, so like, talk about, you know, the hypocrisy of that, right? Yeah. So and I think because of that, the muddying the waters in that, and what that be the media story, that they haven't charged any of us with handling this. But to answer your question, so it took about we took about 3 days to try to find an independent pathologist. We filmed everything, and then we arranged for the DCPD to pick the children up. We took the first 110 babies, and I drove them to a priest who gave these babies a proper funeral and burial. And then we just took these five babies who are evidence of you know, crimes, and then turned them over to DCPD. What happened was, it took DCPD almost 24 hours to show up. And in the meantime, and this is evidence of the corruption, who they did pick up was one of the girls, and they for something she had done 2 years earlier. So for 2 years, she hadn't been charged federally, but all of a sudden the FBI shows up at her house, swoops this girl up for something she did 2 years earlier, 5 or 6 or 7 hours after we informed DCPD that these babies were there. So the FBI swooped her up, never entered the house, but suddenly then after FBI came and got her, DC Homicide and Forensics showed up several, like 4 or 5 hours later, picked up the babies and ran a story in the media that this crazed pro-life lunatic was harboring babies in her basement. And as a result, the FBI raided her to get the children. So that's, you know, wow. That's the slander of the media and how they wanted to spin this story because of the power of what this story entails. So there's been a lot of information about that, one which we've all tried to, and you know, at this point, has pretty much been cleared up. But no, we delivered, we have letters from our lawyers to DCPD the day before she was arrested and the day before we picked these, had these babies picked up, explaining and asking DC to come pick them up. But interesting, of all the timing for the federal government to charge Lauren for something she had done 2 years earlier. Pretty interesting timing that they waited till, you know, the moment then we released this information to DCPD to do it. So
seems definitely deliberate. Like, obviously, you don't forget about something like that. Like, you've got to ask yourself how many coincidences, like, before it's like, it's not a coincidence. And it certainly doesn't seem like it is just a interesting coincidence, the timing. But I believe, I think I heard that she was arrested for a pro-life thing. And, you know, just to sort of clear it up, people are like, oh, what is she arrested for? It was for another sort of pro-life activist thing that had happened a number of years ago, all to do with, you know, saving babies from being aborted. So
at the same, ironically, at the same abortion clinic too. So she did something called a Red Rose Rescue, where they go inside the abortion clinic, they sit down with the mothers and the babies, and give these mothers red roses, and then basically go between them and the abortionist and say, "Hey, I will not let you kill your child today. We're going to love you and your child," and get arrested. So that was a rescue that she had done 2 years earlier, and they decided at that moment to file federal charges against her. So
okay, and whereabouts is this all at the moment? And not just where is it legally at the moment, like is it an open investigation? Are they still looking into it? Are there potential charges that are going to be laid on the abortionist or the abortion clinic? And not just that, what is the sort of public response been to all of this? Has it been supportive of an investigation, or is it sort of in line with sweeping it under the carpet?
I think it's a mixed bag, but there is a very growing, I would say, movement of people that are wanting justice. It's justice for the five thing has become quite a deal over here, especially in light of the fact that DC mayor is trying to cover this up. So what's also interesting about this case is this abortionist, it was already in an undercover video several years before this, bragging about not providing medical care to babies born alive. So this abortionist, I hate to even use the term doctor, is so grotesque that he's not even really respected in his own kind of clan. And he botched an abortion so bad one time that he killed the woman. And then it was so bad, they found fetal remains in her lung. And so all the way, just everywhere, and all the way even in one of her lungs. And so this abortionist is already just not the greatest. And so people are wanting to get justice, but, you know, really, as you know, often the desires of the people do not coincide with, you know, the politics that are pushed from the top. And so they say it's an ongoing investigation. They still have, I know that they still have the babies at a medical examiner's office. And so now is just the time that we have to put pressure on the medical examiner, pressure on the mayor. We're doing another rally in the very beginning of May to try to bring awareness and try to put pressure on them to do what's right. There are so very few laws that protect babies in general, but the few that are on the books, it's just appalling to me that there's such little oversight and accountability that they're not even willing to enforce the little protections that they do have for babies that are born alive and babies that are come out of the womb and are brutally murdered. So
with tragic. You said that the medical examiner has these five babies at the moment, but you also mentioned at the beginning of the recording that no autopsies were going to be performed. So is that the case? Like, or is there still a possibility with the rally and with awareness and things that an autopsy could potentially be performed on the babies?
Oh yeah, no. And in fact, there's over 60 members of Congress and I can't remember over 30 members of the Senate are calling for a congressional hearing and an open investigation. And they're calling for an autopsy on these babies. But it really just depends on whether they're going to do that. In fact, Ted Cruz said that if he wins the Senate, if the Republicans wins the Senate in this next election coming here in November, that he will basically be the head of chair in this committee or whatever. And he would be doing an open investigation. And if that they got rid of those babies, it would be very bad for them. So no, this is very much still going on, and there is still hope. So the hope is that we can just get enough of a stigma around here and build this movement, not only to, awaken the country to the horrors of the reality and need for us to stand up, but also just for this justice for these children. So that's my prayer, is that we can put enough pressure on them in order to get justice here.
Absolutely. I think, it's part of our inherited nature to want justice. I often have to remind myself to not become bitter because of the things that I've seen. And Piper once wrote a book called Battling Unbelief. And it's like basically seven sort of sins that Christians get trapped with. And one of them was bitterness. And I was really convicted about it because I have this real sense of I need justice. And if I feel like there's an injustice, I get really angry and really bitter. And this is something that I've obviously seen in myself that I need to work on as a Christian, as a person. And I often wonder whether that's why I became a detective, because I just have this real need and hunger for justice. But I have to remind myself that God's perfect justice will not avoid any man, woman, and no one. It will come, whether it be in this life or the next. The perfect justice will escape no man, and we all have to face judgment. And I sort of, Piper sort of talks about just putting that at the foot of the cross and knowing that it's going to be served. And so that gives me what I need to stop being so bitter and upset about these sorts of things. It's not easy. It's not easy.
No, for sure.
I'm sure,
and especially I can even speak to that if I could. One thing I think God has taught me through this is that justice and anger is a real reaction that even God has, and we're made in His image. And so that's a real thing. And I think it can be, it's not often spoken enough, that righteous anger can be a very good thing. But it's also interesting because the more I thought about this, I realized that hatred is not a characteristic of God. His justice is. And his hatred of sin and evil comes out of justice, but it's not itself. His love, it stems from love and not hate as a character quality of God. And so that's kind of really helped me to kind of temper and keep my anger in a perfect place in order to use it for the kingdom, to be the hands and feet of Christ. And I am just so overwhelmingly convinced that this has happened because of the Church of Christ, because we have not, as Christians, we have not stood up and not done. So an atheist does not even have the objective moral standing as as a, you know, like Jeff Durbin says, like you're stardust and you're complaining about moral rights and wrongs, you know, atrocities. And so unbelievers, it's no surprise that atheists, this atheist kind of milieu that we're in, that's swimming in, doesn't view humanity with the type of understanding that it should, because you don't have the even the underlining for justice to why, as a cosmic, you know, accident, you are decrying the moral injustice of an against another human and a human person. But since we're created in this image of God, it fully explains objective standards for justice and righteousness that we feel innately inside, that our, you know, scientific, naturalistic, atheist, moral view can't account for. So I think that's why, as believers, we need to stand up and be the hands and feet. But this is just a huge case of the treachery, self-love, and cowardice of the American gospel and its leaders in particular. It's a living and breathing rebuke. These babies and what's happened to them is a living and breathing rebuke to the Church of Jesus Christ. And it's not until we as believers stand up and be a force of change, his hands and feet, his prophetic mouthpiece, to stand against this horrible evil and to end it. We have to, Evelyn, we have to end this thing. It has to end. It has to end. And I'm so utterly convinced and spurred on to end this by whatever means necessary to end this brutal, brutal wickedness and dismemberment of these babies. So,
yeah, I think that
certainly we are, I believe we're nations under God's judgment. I think that we've mocked him for too long. We've been ripping limbs off babies at 9 months old, crushing their heads at 9 months old. We've just mocked him for too long. And you know, like there's only so much I think he'll do till he does bring down his judgment on us. And yeah, it is a great leveling. And I think we are in desperate and dire need of a revival of the church, because I think a weak church creates a weak community and a weak culture. And that's when these ideologies are able to infiltrate. And that's when these ideologies are able to not only infiltrate, you know, our societal sort of functionalities and things, it infiltrates the pulpit, it infiltrates the church. And essentially we hand the keys over to Caesar, to our church door, and go, whatever, you know, you know, you're our new God, you're our new source of security and everything else. And I think the church needs a big leveling, a big shake up, and a new era of shepherds to sort of lead us out of these dark times. 100%. But you know, I think it was John Calvin, he said, you know, if God wants to judge a nation, he's going to give them bad leaders. And we're seeing that with our government, and we're also seeing that with our shepherds, with our churches. Yep. And so I have got hope that all of this is going to birth a new era of Christianity, you know, a new era of men and women of faith who are going to persist in the truth, who are going to pick up the cross and follow him, and who are going to stay on that narrow path. You know, it's not easy, but we certainly have a responsibility to do it as Christians. But I wanted to sort of finish just to sort of wrap up what actually happened. What about the mothers of these babies? That's something I wanted to ask. Have they come forward? There's been a bit of a media attention in America, not so much in Australia, but certainly online and in the social media forum. Have the mothers of these babies come forward and said anything, or have they kind of just stayed quiet about it all?
Yeah, I don't think, not to my knowledge, any of them have, none of them have come forward. It would be really hard for them to prove. I mean, I guess it wouldn't be super hard. They could just say, it would be hard to really prove that these babies are theirs without a DNA test or something like that. But I guess all they would have to do is say, hey, I went to Washington Surgery Center on particular day, and that I believe that's my baby. But I mean, they do probably 20 abortions every day at some of these places. Not all of those are surgical. A lot of them are pill abortions, but none of them have come forward. But that is a good question. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we would love for them to come forward. I would love to help them provide, post-abortive counseling, to provide, see what issues led them to do this. There's always underlying issues besides, I just want to kill my kid. That's obviously not the reason why a lot of these women end up there, whether that be socioeconomic or, even domestic issues as to why this happens. But, I would totally invite in it, if any of these babies or these women's babies' mothers came forward, we would love to come alongside them and help them. So
something we can certainly pray for. It would be, I imagine it would be hard to escape it if most people in 2022 have social media. They have Facebook, they have Instagram, they have Twitter. Like, I'm sure they would be doing the maths in their head sitting at home going, I went there on that day. I was about 9 months at the time. I had a girl or I had a boy. And, you would think that you would hope, and my prayer is that there is some kind of conviction and accountability and responsibility. And maybe, I don't know, like me, I'm thinking about it, like you would just want to know if that's your baby, that the images that are being all on social media. So maybe that's something we can pray for, that maybe these mothers can, be convicted and hopefully find the Lord through all of this exposure and maybe come forward. But I wanted to sort of touch on as well the truck driver. Has he copped any legality issues? Has he had to provide statements? Is he, what's sort of his involvement from this point? Because he did a pretty big thing.
It's interesting. We would really want him to come forward. He hasn't come forward. And I don't know if he's been fired from his job. I don't know what happened to him. But we were really trying to come through on our promise to give these babies a proper burial. So I think he can, somewhat be at released and, relieved that his courage in coming forward and doing this, being somewhat of a whistleblower without even realizing it. I think he did it as an act of love to these babies, but no doubt he has definitely suffered because of this, and I would even love to come alongside with him. But he hasn't come forward. And in fact, Curtis Bay has put out statements. That's the energy company that picks up these babies. They put out statements denying that they even pick up babies at all, and categorically denying that they even deal with any type of fetal remains. So it's interesting, the kind of cover up job that they're trying to do.
How can
they
do that? Because is it common practice for them to get the aborted babies? How can they deny that?
These, I think what happens is these are medical waste companies. So they deal with all different types of medical waste. I doubt Curtis Bay even gives a rip about abortion at all. And so, it's very easy for them just to cancel that contract. And rather than, why in the world would they incur all of this negative press for just picking up, they have other business. Like, picking up babies is probably such a small percentage of what they do. Although we abort 3,000 children a day in this country. So, in the grand scheme of things, it's very, very bad press for them that this energy company that converts biomedical waste for electricity for the Baltimore area, Maryland area, has now been exposed as a company that is literally taking fetal remains of the community, overwhelmingly the minority communities of the Baltimore area, and then using them to charge their laptops. gruesomely horrifying. So it's very bad for them. They've even cleaned up their website. On their website, I posted the pictures of before and after, but they even had a phrase on their website that something to the effect of from cradle to grave, we provide medical, and so that was very, very bad for them too.
Sack the marketing team. That's terrible.
Oh, totally. Wow. And so they've done a pretty quick cover up job and revamping of their website to try to cover up, put public statements out at categorically denying that they even deal in fetal remains, whatsoever. Yeah. So, very, very bad for them. But.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a whole nother, I feel like we could do a whole nother podcast on what they're doing with those 3,000 babies a day, because there is so much about the disposal of these babies and also, things to do with abortion clinics and companies and what they do afterwards. But I feel like that's probably another episode. And maybe if you're willing, maybe we can catch up again and have another sort of show, and you can update us maybe on the case, update us on what's sort of going on, and we can get into a couple of these other things. But, I appreciate you coming on. I feel like it's been really difficult, but it's, again, like we mentioned, it's something that we can't put in the corner and not look at anymore. We can't keep sweeping it under the rug. This is something that needs to be, the cat needs to be let out of the bag, basically. Mm-hmm. And too many people, like I know in Australia, as I said, people don't know that this is what happens. Mm-hmm. People just think that, you go in one day and you come out the other and you're not pregnant anymore. It doesn't work that way. Babies are being killed. And so I appreciate you sort of coming and putting your face and your name out there and being so bold and unapologetic in your stance. I'm encouraged by your courage, and I just want to thank you for all that you're doing and that your wife is doing. And before we go, is there somewhere where people can go to follow you, or if they want to know more, or if they want to support things that you might be doing, like where you can kind of direct them?
Sure. Yeah. I'm a director of a pro-life organization called Survivors of the Abortion Holocaust. And so you can find us on Facebook or Instagram. I'm on Instagram, AJ Hurley, and survivors.la on Instagram. I think on Facebook, it's facebook.com/wearesurvivors. So those are places that you can kind of follow the story and see what's happening, or if you want to support us financially. I would love to say that this ministry runs on fairy tales and rainbows, but it takes hard work and effort and generosity of people that can keep my lights on in order to keep doing this work. But it's been a grueling, unbelievably difficult time, but at the same time, I'm so grateful to God that he's allowed this to happen. A quick word just to people listening. I think when I try to think about what makes this happen and why this is still legal, I think it's just because of comfort and apathy and really self-love. So I would urge everyone to think about how they spend their time. Think about how you spend your leisure, and to sacrifice, to pick up your cross. Christ says to pick up your cross and follow him, and use your time to invest in the kingdom of God instead of, contributing to all of the things that take up our time. I kind of said, Daily Wire did a piece on, and they asked me what the issue was as to why the church has apathy in this regard. And I really think it comes down to the gospel of comfort and ease and self-love. Christianity has become this almost psychological kind of blanket that people put on, you know, and we've sang the song Oceans, you know, about our own, you know, my soul in comfort in God, and my spiritual, you know, which is great. You know, God is a huge comfort to us. But when the focus becomes all about our comfort and our self-love and our just this gospel of self, while the world is burning, is so antithetical to the mission of Christ that said, come and die, pick up your cross and follow me to even to death if need be. And the greatest love man had ever known is to lay down your life for your friends. So this will continue until people wake up and choose choose to sacrifice. So
yeah, absolutely, very well said. I agree with everything, and we have to stop encouraging and lauding narcissism in our culture and within ourselves as human beings. But again, I really want to thank you for coming on. My prayers are with you and with your wife, and with everybody else who was involved with that horrific case. And I look forward to, you know, staying in touch and hearing about what's happening with it in the future.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Evelyn. God bless you. Thank you for everything you're doing.
This is happening down your street. Everything that we've been talking about is real. Please end this. Please do something about the greatest atrocity, the greatest human rights violation of the most innocent and defenseless human beings that are systematically being eliminated on your street. So this is a baby girl. She has several lacerations on the back of the skull. One is in the occipital region back here. As you can see, the skull is totally broken. Seems, well, yeah, that's the main incision right there that they made. Has other trauma to the left of the parietal region and to the right parietal too. This is what we call choice in this country. This is what we call health care. We use cute little euphemisms to distract from what it really is. This is what we call choice. Pastors, moms, dads, end this.